Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the Blog Talk Radio studio in the heart of Hudson County. Folks, you know it's always in the beautiful Union City Weehawken border here in the Garden State. Blog Talk Radio brings to you the latest edition of Working the Marks. And I am New Jersey's premier journalist, Fernando Uribe, and he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the great Patrick Vincent Rivera. What's going on, PBR?
Hey, I'm hanging in there. Professor, that's the only border that you don't mind seeing people cross back and forth, right? The Union City Weehawken one?
That's correct. Good one, right? That is correct. Yes. I believe in some preservation of borders and sovereignty, but not here. That's the county, folks. That's
gotcha.
A good take there by PBR. Folks, again, always make sure you shoot us an email about what you like about the show, workinthemarks@gmail.com. Again, we do like to look at our inbox. And as my students can attest, I do answer my emails rather promptly. So write to us what you love about the show, what you don't like about it, and everything else in between, workinthemarks@gmail.com. Don't forget to like us also on Facebook as the page is being revised, Work in the Marks. You'll see that those two very handsome gentlemen in the cover photo, yours truly and Patrick Vincent Rivera. And, of course, folks, check us out also on Instagram. Follow us at @working_the_marks. And, of course, also on Twitter @working_marks. Patrick, hope you had a great Mother's Day with your mom. How are you feeling this week, brother?
I'm feeling good. I'm a little annoyed. I'm stuck in traffic right now. But, you know, it doesn't matter. Rain, snow, sleet, hail, traffic, no traffic. You know, Working the Marks must go on. The show must go on. So I'm doing all right, but a little stressed out about the traffic. But I guess, you know, that's part of the package when you live in the tri-state area.
It certainly is. And let's get to some news right here for folks. Well, first off, let's do a quick review. Last Sunday on Peacock with the 37 ads during the actual live broadcast, WrestleMania Backlash, MMA from Providence, Rhode Island, one of the premium live events there on Peacock, courtesy of WWE. Good card, Patrick. Again, we reviewed it, but some of these results, I'll tell you, you know, Cody Rhodes versus Seth Rollins, another solid match. If you like wrestling and you like good workers and good storytelling, you got that with Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins. Cody Rhodes rolled them up, held on to the tights, a little bit of a heel move. Not the first face to do that. I'm sure not the last.
Yeah, I was a big fan of it. I know we talked about it last week. I like that they're keeping Cody's momentum going. Obviously, based on some things that happened the following night on Raw, where Cody received a United States title opportunity against Theory. Rollins came out, interfered, and basically kept that feud going. So I'm all for it. I know some people might not like it, may not want to see it. That's fine. Hey, you know, you have the option to change the channel or don't watch it at all. But as somebody who appreciates, you know, good wrestling, I'm excited to see these two guys mix it up and excited to see where this feud goes from here.
Again, great match overall. And for anyone who has not watched the Cody Rhodes episode with Stone Cold Steve Austin on the Broken Skull Sessions, I certainly urge you to do that. Very introspective. Very insightful, too, about where Cody Rhodes stands right now in his professional wrestling career. I think you definitely want to check that out. I think the momentum's on his side for sure. We had Bobby Lashley versus Omos. Again, I think we weren't expecting a five-star match, but it served its purpose. Obviously, Omos got the win, evening up that feud after MVP interfered. Omos was able to chokeslam him. in that movie has. I forget what it's called, but get the win on Bobby Lashley, thus setting up the cage match, which we'll see this Monday night on Raw. Thoughts on this one, Pat?
This one actually surprised me. It was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. You know, Omos, I think, is slowly progressing. I think putting him with MVP has been a fantastic decision. You know, MVP is a great talker and a guy that I think in quite some time we're going to look back at as one of the best managers of an era. But, yeah, I got to say I was pleasantly surprised with this matchup. And, you know, let's see where the rest of this feud goes.
I've always been a fan of MVP when he returned back at the Royal Rumble in 2020. I mean, you didn't know what to expect out of him. And let's be fair. I mean, really, at the time of the pandemic, when we were just having, you know, empty arenas and then eventually the Thunderdome type of live shows, MVP came out and was that mouthpiece for Bobby Lashley that was exceptionally gold. I think he's doing the same thing with Omos. We'll see where this feud goes. I'm not sure how much longer it'll last, but certainly a good match at Backlash, for sure. We had Edge versus AJ Styles in a rematch for WrestleMania. Again, if you're a fan of good wrestling and good storytelling between two very solid workers, that's what you got in this second one. Again, you know, I like the fact that, yes, while AJ lost both of these times to Edge, it wasn't so much of a clean finish per se. You had a little distraction in the first match. You had physical interference in this match with Rhea Ripley revealing herself as the new member of Judgment Day. You know, I'd like to see AJ eventually get a win. I'm not sure when that will be, but again, another solid match this past Sunday.
Yeah. I kind of felt like I almost telegraphed it last week when we were talking about it. Just a really, really solid way to reveal Rhea. You know, the crowd was into it. And then, you know, just that turn when she turned, you know, from you know, facing Edge to the camera, to the hard cam, I thought that was just a really, really cool moment. Very well done. The match itself was fantastic. And, you know, just really cool to see Edge in this different phase of his career and just how he's still doing some really interesting things. And really, moreover, like how he's helping the younger generation get to that next step. So I see nothing but positives between, you know, him and Rhea and Damian in that group. I think that they're just only going to get better from here on out. And cool to see Edge get a haircut, too. The haircut definitely suited him the following night on Monday. And, yeah, just overall really good stuff. And I'm curious to see where this goes as well.
No, I agree. It'll be interesting to see if they get a fourth member, but right now this faction looks really solid. It's very dark. There's a gothic aspect to it to some extent, you know, in terms of Edge's new music. Obviously,
yeah.
Edge with a new haircut. And, you know, we've talked about it off the air. This is a guy who, when needed, will reinvent himself, will change his look.
Yeah.
We'll shave, we'll not shave, we'll let his hair grow, we'll not let his hair grow. It's a testament to how fortunate we are to see Edge once again when we thought that we'd never see him wrestle. When we returned in 2020, that was gold. He's been doing, I mean, A-plus work since coming back. And I think this heel run is showing once again that ruthless side of Edge that we've always loved about him when he's been that heel. So, again, I'm with you. Definitely interested to see what this goes.
Just to add one more thing to that, you know, I think what Edge has that a lot of older guys that have come back don't really have is awareness. Like Edge just really has a good understanding and a good awareness of himself, of, you know, what he can do to improve, what he can do with whatever he's given to improve that. And just, you know, he just has a really great understanding of the business as well. And a funny thing you mentioned about the theme song is actually done by Alter Bridge, which they're known as a Christian band. So that's kind of ironic and funny in its own little way. But, yeah, I mean, the theme song, everything, I mean, like, this is just, I mean, it's good stuff. So, I'm curious to see where it goes. But Edge just really continuing to show, like, just what a great professional he is.
Oh, absolutely. Certainly. And, again, very interested to see where Judgment Day goes from here. The SmackDown Women's Championship match, a rematch from WrestleMania. This one, an I Quit match. You know, this was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. You know, the same reaction I had after WrestleMania. I was hoping to see Charlotte retain. I just can't get behind Rhonda Pat. Like, I get it. She's a mainstream star. There's a lot of crossover appeal. I get that. But I got to tell you, I watched SmackDown last night. I you know, people that I know were at either Mania or have been in other shows where Rhonda's appeared. It's not like this overwhelming pop. I mean, she's over, yes. But it's not like this inspiring character. She's still very blah on the microphone. All right, whatever. I was hoping maybe Charlotte would retain. That's not the case. Pretty good match, very physical, pulling out a lot of those old gimmicks, the, you know, the Singapore canes, you know, shots on the outside. I mean, it was what you wanted from an I Quit match, the back and forth with the microphone. At the end, Rhonda gets her to say I quit, which is funny because the marks on Twitter and Instagram, well, this is the first time. No, Charlotte has tapped out numerous other occasions. It's just funny that people don't remember that. But if you have a good memory of wrestling like you and I do, you clearly recall when that's happened. Apparently, Charlotte's taking some time off, whether she's getting married finally to Andrade or just needs time off. I guess this is a good way to write her off story, you know, the storylines right now on television.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I haven't been thrilled with Ronda's return either. I feel like, you know, her segments or promo work is a little bit flat. But nonetheless, I mean, she's a mainstream star. And in terms of booking, I thought it was a great decision to put the belt on her as opposed to keeping it on Charlotte, because that really does nothing and you just diminish Ronda in the long run. But all in all, you know, the match surprised me. I think it was better than their WrestleMania match, I might even say. And, you know, I felt that it was nice to see. I mean, because, you know, Charlotte has that gritty side to her. Charlotte, you know, will bleed, she'll scratch, she'll claw, she'll bite, you know, she'll get rugged and she'll get really gritty if she has to. And you know, I thought that match really brought it out. I liked the finish a lot. I thought the finish with the, you know, the arm bar with the chair, I thought was really good, a really good way to end the match. But, yeah, I mean, all in all, I thought it was excellent. It's just, again, I'm with you on the Rhonda thing. Like, something's missing. There's just something there that's kind of lacking. And I don't feel like I'm personally as interested in it as maybe I should be. But we'll see where we go from here. I think it's difficult, you know, to be a baby face like that and to have, you know, to have that energy, that desire, that passion to want to keep going out there and cutting these, you know, at times very cheesy promos. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see how Rhonda does. And you know, one thing you could say about Rhonda is she's a professional. And, you know, whether it's in MMA or pro wrestling, she's going to adapt and she'll figure out a way to make it through. So, you know, let's see where she goes from here.
I'm with you. Definitely will be very interesting to see what happens with Charlotte, because eventually she'll come back. She'll win a title again. We know that the draft is coming up this fall. Who knows? Maybe they'll switch it to Raw. A lot of possibilities with Charlotte Flair when it comes to being in the title picture, which she always will be, again, as long as she's healthy. Looking at another match here, Madcap Moss versus Happy Corbin. Again, you know, a good match. You know, good workers, you know, right? Happy Corbin's been a solid worker for some time. Madcap Moss has really come along. I mean, this feud really does nothing for me. I understand why Madcap Moss checks off a lot of boxes. He's a former, he's a former NFL player. Obviously, Happy Corbin, very, very athletic. You know, again, I'm not a fan of this type of feud, but hey, it gets people excited. Madcap Moss is over with that audience. Not exactly a gimmick that I like, but I understand why Vince pushes it. You know, it's not for me, but it's for a lot of other people. Good match. Again, we saw what happened yesterday on SmackDown. Apparently Corbin's incapacitated him with a very serious injury. Maybe he'll be off TV for a little while. I don't know. But again, a good match on Sunday. Nothing to write home about as far as I'm concerned, but that's me.
I mean, for me personally, I've been a big fan of Madcap Moss. I like everything that the guy's done. And I know that these are two guys that aren't exactly the favorites of the marks. But, you know, these are two guys out there. These are two guys that go out there, that put in a shift, that have a good attitude, that perform to the best of their ability, and do exactly what is asked of them. And I think as an employer, what else could you ask for, really? You know what I mean? Corbin, to me, has been a guy that I think, you know, the fans actually did appreciate at one point when he was in NXT. But obviously, you know how fickle fans can be. You know, once you go to the main roster, you lose your shine. And, you know, he's a guy who's consistently gotten better. And with Madcap Moss, I mean, this is a guy, like, they gave him something to reinvent himself with. And he's really made the most of the opportunity. And I give him a ton of credit. I mean, you know, for him to go out there in those suspenders and, you know, have to tell these bad jokes and do these gimmicks, you know, and all this other stuff, you know, he really does it to the best of his ability and he makes it work. So I'm all in. You know, I like these guys. I'm curious to see where they go. And again, you know, it's good that you have that awareness as a fan that I think sometimes we tend to forget, you know, that some things in the program are not for us. They're for, you know, the younger part of the audience. And, you know, it's stuff that, you know, is going to appeal to them, you know. But one thing I could definitely appreciate is guys that go out there and give it their best and give it their all. And Corbin and Madcap Moss, I think, are two guys that are doing that. So, yeah, you know, interesting that they're taking them off TV. I know Corbin was supposed to take some time off, as reported by Billy Boddy. You know, I think his wife's having a baby. So I don't know if maybe they're taking them both off TV or maybe Madcap got an injury. We don't know just yet, but, you know, I guess we're going to just have to see how this one plays out over time.
Absolutely. It'll be very, very interesting. And, you know, listen, sometimes guys like Corbin, if they're off TV for a little while, it's a good thing. You know, he's been on that main roster for many years now. Has gone on, you know, some different transformations, right, from first off coming up from NXT, then becoming, you know, Constable Corbin and then King Corbin to now Happy Corbin. He's adapted. You know, again, I've always liked his old theme music. I've always liked his old demeanor. But like anything else, it seems like, you know, Baron Corbin's been able to adapt himself to what Vince wants in a guy, and he's been a very serviceable heel, to say the least, in his run on the main roster. Main event time, the Usos, the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, and the Undisputed Universal Champion, Roman Reigns, the Bloodline, took on Drew McIntyre and the Raw Tag Team Champions, RK-Bro, Randy Orton, and Matt Riddle. Solid matchup. I know a lot of marks online, especially the AEW homers, we're calling this match a spot fest, which I thought was ironic considering that they enjoy spot fest every Wednesday and Friday collectively on Dynamite and Rampage. Great match. Certainly a way to keep Roman hot and dominant by getting the win, but not in a way that was, you know, a little underhanded per se, right, as a heel. But a solid match overall, a lot of big, big spots. It's what you want from main event guys like Roman Reigns. But again, I think the guy that surprised the most in the match, or the one that really, really impressed me the most, was Matt Riddle. This guy clearly is coming along as a solid main event player. And this is a guy who I can see main eventing WrestleMania, maybe not next year in Los Angeles, but maybe the year after. But he is a solid player. He's young. He's athletic. He's great on the microphone. And he really pushes that happy-go-lucky babyface vibe that resonates with a lot of people. And I think that this match was solid.
Yeah. In regards to the AEW homers that called it a spot fest, we have a phrase in Spanish, and I'm sure our Spanish speakers will know this. I'm simply going to say, ¿qué cojones tiene? Because they do have some serious cojones to be saying that was a spot fest when you're an AEW fan that likes, you know, Darby Allin jumping off a 20-foot ladder onto some chairs for TV. I mean, you know, that and TV that barely even cracked a million. So, but that's pretty ballsy for them to say. I thought the match was excellent. I thought they told a great story. I thought it could have been a good opportunity to have Roman do the job there, and it wouldn't hurt him necessarily, and it would also set up a potential matchup with Drew. But all in all, the match itself was fantastic. And to your point on Matt Riddle, I mean, this is a guy that for quite some time, you know, I've been singing his praises. And, you know, even though you haven't been the biggest fan of his, you can also see the potential that's there and the ability that's there. And, it's no surprise to me that those six guys knocked it out of the park in a six-man tag match. not a trios match, a six-man
yes.
tag match. Trios matches are done in Mexico and, you know, Shikara, but that's a whole other story. But yeah, I thought it was an excellent match. And, you know, it was a good way to keep Roman on the card, even though he was injured, and to have him come in and do his stuff. And, you know, yeah, I just thought it was fantastic. And I know that there's been some news coming out lately, even though we weren't going to cover it on our news, but it's related that Roman is actually signing a contract with fewer dates. So, you know, some people are obviously mad about that or whatever. I mean, the guy has done everything he can to keep this company on his back. You know, he's been able to do so much more than I think people anticipated he would do. And, you know, this is a guy that, you know, I could see transitioning into movies easily. I mean, he's already been in a movie with his cousin. I could see him transitioning into television. I could see him doing a lot of different things. So, you know, I'm not surprised that this is happening. But more importantly, I think what this really does is this gives an opportunity to younger guys to step up to the plate and to become that next big star. It gives an opportunity to a guy like Bron Breakker, a guy like Matt Riddle, you know, guys like that, Theory, guys that you look at and you say, hey, this guy could be the guy for the company in the future. I'm really, really interested to see what happens. And I know some people were down about that, but, you know, Roman will be back. Roman will be there for the big shows. He'll be there to do the things that he needs to do. But in the meantime, I think this is a good chance for those aforementioned guys, as well as a guy like Cody. He's come in, and this is a guy that's been – he's flirting with the main event, but this is the potential for him to really cross over and to become a main event player. So, yeah, I'm curious to see how things play out over the next couple of months.
Oh, no doubt. And again, for anyone that attended the Trenton House show last Saturday night, I guess they were filming the Saturday night's main event special for the network. And again, you know, Roman gave a speech, which got a lot of attention across, you know, the internet and a lot of the social media websites, where it was very cryptic in terms of what he was saying. Oh, I really appreciate your time. And normally I know traditionalists and purists like Jim Cornette, we're not happy with that, because it's, if you're a heel, you don't cut promos like that where someone's clearly going to videotape it and then release it. You know, obviously it got him a little bit, not heat, but it got him some, you know, vitriol by some of the marks online. What are you doing breaking kayfabe? Kayfabe's been broken for a while, Pat. So it's like, if a guy's going to say that and just sort of hint at maybe taking time off, let him. This guy has to have an appointment with, you know, an orthopedic specialist immediately. I mean, his back must be killing him from carrying this company for the last 3 years, okay? That's just the truth. Anyone who watches wrestling and doesn't know what Roman Reigns has been doing, you know, he has been stellar. Never mind PWI or, you know, the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Awards. I mean, Roman Reigns has been the single best professional wrestler for the last 3 years in terms of what he's done with his character, match quality, promos, merch. Say what you want, he's that heel that people tune in to watch every single week. So interesting to see, again, what happens with Roman Reigns moving forward. Pat, let's get to some news here. One of the big news items this week, Eric Bischoff on Twitter, and he expanded upon it this week on his very successful podcast, 83 Weeks, with Conrad Thompson, wrote, quote, "Better storytelling equals growth. If AEW ever wants to get the other 900 fans in the room, they need to stop booking for one small segment of the audience." He went into detail on his podcast on YouTube, which you can check out there with 83 Weeks, and of course also with Conrad Thompson. And that apparently got the attention of one of AEW's biggest stars, and his response has gotten him a lot of backlash, to say the least. Again, not to be confused with backlash from Sunday.
Not WrestleMania backlash.
There you go. CM Punk on his Twitter responded to Bischoff by saying, quote, "Wrestling Twitter needs to stop amplifying all the old head, bad faith, bad take, carny dipshits." Excuse the language, folks. "They had their moment in the sun. Let them die in the dark with their ego podcasts. Quote me," end quote. Pat, I got to tell you, this is something that, as someone who does media in New Jersey, and has been known to get into some, you know, beefs online on either Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. I would argue I've never been this myopic. And Phil Brooks looks really myopic here, because Bischoff is a guy, say what you want, for a body of work, came within a hair of putting Vince McMahon out of business in his time as executive vice president of WCW. Is everything Eric Bischoff did great? No. He himself has had a lot of self-awareness and contrition and saying, hey, there are some things he could have done better. But this guy produced great television. He sold out buildings across this country. Not to the extent Vince did, but he sold out buildings, got ratings. And again, it's why his podcast is called 83 Weeks. It's because for 83 weeks, WCW, under his leadership, beat Vince McMahon in the ratings. So he knows what he's talking about when it comes to wrestling and production. Maybe not booking, but production and television. And for someone like him to say, hey, what everybody who has any intellectual honesty has to know, AEW is not growing their audience. And that's a spot-on take by Eric Bischoff. And for Punk to respond in that way, in a very dismissive, condescending, sanctimonious way, I think speaks volumes about how defensive people like him and Kenny Omega and Tony Khan are with All Elite Wrestling. It's a bad look, Patrick.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. I'm kind of actually disappointed in Punk. You know, I expected not anything like that. I mean, look, there wasn't anything that Bischoff said in that tweet that was like bombastic, or nothing that Jim Cornette hasn't said, or Disco Inferno hasn't said, or, you know, anybody on K100, or we haven't said on our own show. You know, it's no secret that AEW caters to that audience, that Mark audience, that niche audience. And the problem is like, yeah, that's great and dandy and all, if you want to, you know, be something that's like locally syndicated, or, you know, have your shows like once a month. If you're an indie, that's fine. You know what I mean? But if you're trying to be a program that's nationally syndicated, that's trying to compete with the WWE, regardless of what they said at the beginning, it makes you look crappy. And it makes you look like a hokey program that's not a television program. And at the end of the day, you know, yeah, it's pro wrestling, it's sports entertainment, whatever you want to call it, but it's a television program. And I know that Vince gets a lot of heat regardless, but I know Vince gets a lot of shit from the fans, you know, with segments like R-Truth and stuff like that and all those other types of segments. And again, I think as a fan, you have to have a certain level of awareness to be able to say, okay, I don't like this. This personally isn't anything that's you know, enticing to me as a viewer, but there's a group of people that do like it, and that works for them. And believe it or not, that kind of stuff is what generates those ratings that are over a million consistently, you know, because you look at Raw, and even though some people might say it's the worst wrestling show in the world, they're still doing better than Dynamite regularly. And more importantly, they have a little bit of everything for everyone. And that's the thing, because at the end of the day, wrestling's a variety show, but AEW is just focused on that one thing. And, yeah, I'm just disappointed in Punk, honestly, because I wouldn't expect him to say something like that, because, you know, Punk was brought up in the old school, and I think Punk, you know, at least had that level of awareness to say, hey, you know what? Yeah, there's something to this. Like, this is right. Like, we aren't growing our audience. We aren't really doing what we should be doing if we want to be taken seriously as a competitor to WWE. You know, we're having too much of this niche stuff that, you know, is not going to get over with mainstream fans. It's not even going to get over with casual fans. I mean, I can't tell you the number of people in my age group, and I'm sure it's the same in your age group, people that used to watch wrestling years ago that completely stopped. And, you know, when AEW came about, they kind of perked up their ear and said, oh, hey, this might be something interesting. This might be something different. Let me check it out. Or, you know, these are the people that would casually watch WrestleMania or SummerSlam or any of the big events. So, you know, Tony Khan had a chance to grab all those casuals, and he had a chance to do something with them, and he didn't, and he still hasn't. And I'll be honest with you, I think even if he puts the belt on Hangman Page, it's really not going to make that much of a difference. It's not. Like, we're not talking about, like, a $2 million, like, or anything like that, because, again, like, this isn't the CM Punk from 12 years ago. This is a totally different CM Punk. You know what I mean? This is, I'm sorry, 11 years, 11, 10 or 11 years ago. But yeah, like, this isn't the same guy, you know? And I'll be honest, I don't think his in-ring work has been that good. He's worked with a lot of guys that, quite frankly, are not at that level. And, you know, the only good thing he's really done has been the MJF thing. And that took forever to get to. So it's like, I don't know. I feel like we're beating a dead horse here with the CM Punk thing, at least on my end, because, you know, he hasn't really done what I think fans are going to do. And I'll argue this, but I think had he gone to WWE, they would have done a lot more with him, and it would have been a lot better. And he would have been putting things that would have been compelling, and he would have generated more viewership. But, you know, that's just me.
Pat, I'm with you. And I think that, you know, again, this makes him look really bad in the same light as Tony Khan, who's been defensive and has taken to Twitter to go at it with people, same thing with Kenny Omega. It's just, again, listen, you know, we're human beings. I get it. We're going to get defensive about things because we know that people may say, make comments on social media, whether it's gaslighting or whatever you call it, and they're going to take it personally. And I get that. But what Bischoff, you said it perfectly. Bischoff didn't say anything blasphemous. He didn't say anything malicious. He didn't say anything derogatory or slanderous or whatever, or defamatory. He simply said that growth is a result of better storytelling. They're not doing that. And again, you know, AEW fans can go blame the NBA playoffs. They can blame the Stanley Cup playoffs. They can blame whatever they want right now in this
season. They're
going to
blame
cycle.
The World Cup in the fall. They're going to blame the World
exactly.
Cup.
Exactly. You know, come Thanksgiving time when the World Cup is on television. The bottom line is that AEW, and listen, I still watch it every week because I'm entertained by it. I text you, I laugh, I LOL all the time. Oh my God, did you see this madness? And, you know, we'll laugh, and I know you'll be outraged, and we have funny conversations about it. But the bottom line is that, you know, I watch it because I want to be entertained, and it's fine. You know, it does what it does for me on Wednesdays. And, you know, right now, Rampage being at 5:30 in the afternoon, like, Jesus, I mean, I'm not sure how many people are watching that. But the numbers don't reflect a good product right now. And, you know, they're not averaging even 1.1 million. They're still under 1 million. And I'm sorry, you know, Double or Nothing's coming up next Sunday during Memorial Day weekend. Again, who knows what that buy rate's going to be like. I'm not going to pay money for that. I'll watch it on one of those free streaming sites online.
I'm not
I'll
even watching it. I'll be in Baltimore. I'll be watching bands instead of watching that. I mean,
okay. I'll watch it. But I mean, and listen, again, this card doesn't look too good right now. But, you know, putting the belt on Punk may not really move the needle a lot come up in Las Vegas. And to say nothing of the fact that Khan's done a very poor job marketing this pay-per-view. I mean, listen, Money in the Bank's in Las Vegas in July. And what does Vince do? Vince has Cody filming promos inside of Allegiant Stadium where the Las Vegas Raiders play already for Money in the Bank. And you would think that Double or Nothing, your premier pay-per-view, right, because that was the first pay-per-view, I think, if I remember, when AEW first started, nothing, not a word. You even know it's in Las Vegas in less than 2 weeks. Again, Khan continues to drop the ball with marketing, with promotions, with the way that he's booking. And Bischoff's right. Again, am I mad at Bischoff for some things he did during his entire tenure? Of course. And even Bischoff's admitted that. But he's not wrong by telling AEW fans, hey, you want to grow your audience, this is what you need to do. And it seems like AEW people are getting really defensive about the obvious. And that's a bad look for a company that says they're in competition with Vince McMahon. They're not in competition with Vince McMahon.
No. I don't think they're in competition with Vince McMahon. I think that they should focus on themselves, and they should continue to do things like their other product. And to your point about Tony Khan and Kenny Omega, I mean, if you're an executive vice president, you have to have thick skin. You have to be able to handle this criticism and not jump back at people and not react and not act that way. And I think part of it might be due to the fact that maybe this isn't as big as they thought it was going to be. You know what I mean? The company as a whole, like, I think in their minds, they assume because they sold a bunch of shirts in Hot Topic and everybody tuned in to see, All Out or All In, that they were somehow going to be able to do this. You know what I mean? And that it was somehow going to be as big as WWE, if not bigger. You know what I mean? I think in their minds, they imagined this whole wrestling war being a lot different than what it actually is. And when in fact, there really is no wrestling war. You know, I mean, I just think that these guys have to be able to take those criticisms from people like Eric Bischoff, which again, people are entitled to feel how they want to feel about him, but guy was a TV executive. The guy knew what the fuck he was talking about. You know, he took WCW and gave them one of the hottest angles, not just in WCW, but one of the hottest angles in the history of the business, and made it work consistently and created, you know, Goldberg and created DDP. And you could say what you will about Goldberg, but the guy drew money and he still draws money. You know what I mean? DDP, you know, he made DDP a lot bigger than he would have been and bigger than what he was up until that point. So, I mean, you know, I just think that a guy like Tony Khan should learn from stuff like that and should say, gee, you know what? He's right. Maybe we need to do these type of things. And to your point in previous episodes of working the marks with Fernando and Patrick here on Blog Talk Radio, you know, you've spoken about how they need to do these little media crossover things, how they need to have celebrity involvement, athlete involvement, all these other types of things. I mean, you know, I just watched SmackDown last night. What are they showing? Charlotte, Stephanie, Alpha Academy, all these people at the Special Olympics. Do you see anybody from AEW in the Special Olympics or doing anything like that? No, right? You don't see them doing any of this stuff. And look, I know to some people that might not mean anything, but that's really big and that's really important and that's a lot of exposure. And that way, you know, when the parents of these kids, you know, who might not be wrestling fans go, gee, who is that person that talked to you? Oh, that's Charlotte Flair. Oh, wow. You know what? I like Charlotte Flair. When is she on? When does she wrestle? Well, you know what? We're going to go see her. We're going to go to a show or we're going to tune into SmackDown and watch her.
That's right.
And that's how you grow an audience. And that's how you create these things, you know, but I just think that Tony Khan is just counting on wrestling fans to like suddenly just pop back up and like be like, yeah, we're here. We love wrestling. And it's like, nah, man, that's not how it's going to work. You have to create those. I mean, what do they have in AEW that's for the kids? That's for children.
Yep.
What do they have?
Pat, you're absolutely right. And again, it goes back to Tony Khan's unwillingness to be adaptable, to try to create crossover appeal. Again, Double or Nothing is less than 2 weeks away. They're doing all their shows that week. They're doing Dynamite at the MGM Grand. They're doing Rampage at the MGM Grand in their arena. And then they're doing Double or Nothing at the T-Mobile Arena. Yeah, it's a big arena. So I think about 20,000 people where the Las Vegas Knights play. Okay, they, you know, that's a big building. Hey, would it kill Tony Khan to have a few of the Las Vegas Raiders maybe participate in something? How about Derek Carr?
Well, the non-incarcerated ones.
Well, the non-incarcerated ones, correct. How about, you know, depending on where the Knights are in the Stanley Cup playoffs, you know what? Maybe have some of them be at ringside or be in the corner of somebody. Like, there's no motivation or initiative by Tony Khan to really push what Vegas is. Vegas is arguably one of the biggest entertainment capitals in the world. People gravitate to Las Vegas, okay? And what's Vince McMahon doing? He's got Cody filming a commercial for Money in the Bank in a stadium that you're thinking, wow, is this what we're going to be seeing for WWE now? Like, you know, yeah, we get it. The big four stadium shows, right? WrestleMania, Rumble, SummerSlam. I mean, I don't recall Survivor Series ever being in a stadium, but who knows? That's probably on the horizon. Guess what?
Yeah.
Vince is doing now the other shows in these stadiums. And what Money to Make is not going to sell out? Of course it is. It's one of the marquee pay-per-views. But instead, Khan is just like hoping that, well, people will tune in. No, if you really want to make money, you've got to start some crossover appeal. Speaking of making money, apparently, according to some different websites, and again, Pat, you know, this is one of the things, folks, that, you know, just like in real-life journalism, you got to see where the sources are, who's reporting this stuff. But according to WrestleKicks, it's a website that tracks and analyzes ticket sales for pro wrestling events. Apparently, the online pre-sale for Forbidden Door, taking place in Chicago at the United Center, it's the AEW New Japan interpromotional show, apparently did sell out according to online pre-sales. Some people are disputing that. Apparently, mostly because AEW didn't release every ticket initially, but it's a building that's going to have over 20,000 in it. According to WrestleTix, they clarified that the current seating setup for the show, which features a stage at one end and excludes seats from being sold at that end, is around 14,000. So the United Center holds around 20,000 for NBA and NHL games. It can be configured to seat more than 23,000 people for some concerts. We know that Chicago has kind of become maybe, you know, the New York City for AEW. The United Center has become their Madison Square Garden for AEW fans. It sold out last August when CM Punk, again, not even talked about being promoted for the show, and it sold out because of even the hint of him returning. Well, it would seem like I don't think he's going to win. We'll do a Double or Nothing preview coming up soon. I don't think he's going to win the belt at Double or Nothing. I think he'll probably win in Chicago, as I'm sure Tony Khan wants to give him that moment that he never got, that main event rub, winning the belt in a city election, which he did. He did win it at the Allstate Arena back in 2011, but this seems like it might be a bigger deal.
Madison Square Garden. He won it back at Madison Square Garden. I'm sorry, but like, and look, I know maybe this is my New Yorker coming out or something like that, but there's no bigger building for wrestling in this country, and arguably the world, than Madison Square Garden. So for them to say, oh, well, he won it in the United Center, man, fuck the United Center. We're talking about Madison Square Garden. Never mind the sports, because I can't stand the Knicks and the Rangers, and I don't really care. You people want to write to the show and give me shit about that, go right ahead. I don't care. They're bum organizations. But I would much rather win the title in Madison Square Garden than win it at the United Center. And that's just me. Again, that's just me. I think you could ask – I mean, I get it. He's from Chicago, but you could ask anybody from Chicago, any wrestler over there. They'd rather win it in Madison Square Garden. So,
No question, Patrick. No question. It's the mecca for a lot of different industries. You would think winning it is the biggest of deals. But I would argue that, you know, some people are reporting that Forbidden Door is not exactly sold out. This is a show that needs to do well, more so for New Japan Pro Wrestling that really needs the revenue.
All right, so there's a lot of stuff going on. I don't know if you saw, but there was something put out yesterday that Kota Ibushi put out a statement talking about how New Japan is very toxic and that basically kind of alluded to the fact that they're involved with the Yakuza. So I don't know how much longer Kota Ibushi is going to be alive. But I just figured I needed to put out that information because there's no way in hell that if you're Japanese, you're going to talk about the Yakuza and not face some type of consequences. But they're definitely in a position where they could use the money. I don't think they're like strung. They're not going to go belly up because obviously they have a base in Japan. But they could definitely make do with, you know, getting some money here off this gate. Now, to your point on Punk and winning the title, I think Punk's going to win the title at Double or Nothing, and I think that he's going to fight Okada in the main event of Forbidden Door, which to me I think is a disaster if you ask me, because Punk is nowhere near the level of Okada in terms of in-ring. Yes, he's a bigger star. Yes, he's a good promo. Yes, he's been established as a guy in the business for quite some time, but Kazuchika Okada at this point is operating on a different level. To me, a more appealing match would be Kazuchika Okada against Bryan Danielson or Kazuchika Okada against Roman. That's interesting because these are people at the peak of their powers that are very, very talented. Unfortunately, Bryan Danielson is a victim of, you know, AEW's signing, promoting, booking, and then you're gone and you're disappeared and now you're in some mid-card baloney, which is, to me, is a travesty because Bryan Danielson is one of the best, if not the best wrestler in the world. And to have him doing stuff with JAS and all this other nonsense to me is a waste of his talent, especially when he's a guy who's, I believe, over 40 now, and this is somebody that you really want to try to maximize what you can with him, especially as a company, you know, that's as young as AEW. But, yeah, I mean, AEW has not been doing good, and it's been reported by guys like Billy Boddy, who's, to me, is the number one news source out there as far as wrestling goes, that, you know, they're not doing good with the video game. They've spent about $80 million trying to produce this video game on their own, creating their own engine instead of, you know, doing what WWE does or other people do, which is, you know, hey, 2K, okay, this is your engine, blah, blah, blah. You know, WWE had issues with 2K in regards to their engine, and they addressed it with them. And from what I understand, this newer version of the game is actually a lot better than previous incarnations. Now, I wouldn't know. I haven't played it yet. I probably will at some point because my kids are going to make me get it. But, you know, that was a lot cheaper than them trying to make their own game from scratch. So they've dumped about $80 million into this. Kenny Omega doesn't get along with the guys who he's making the game with. And the way it's projected right now is that this game, they're not going to see a profit. They're not going to turn a profit from this game until at least the fifth version of the game or the fifth edition of the game. So, I mean, we're talking about, like, if they're going to do a yearly thing, we're talking about, like, 5 years from now before they finally make a profit off of that. Not to mention the fact that their figure sales aren't doing well. And the initial wave, the first wave of the figures sold well, but the problem was is that nobody wanted to produce AEW toys. The only person that did was the guy who I believe used to work for Jax when they made the WWE toys back in the day. So he was the one that did it. But right now, all of their figure sales and them breaking even is all resting on the release of the CM Punk figure. So they're hoping to generate anywhere between $2 million off of that figure. Now, if you flip the coin and you look at WWE, their figure sales aren't doing well either, because a lot of the figures that they're trying to sell are from people that were released. So, you know, people aren't going to buy figures of people that are no longer on TV, because what's the point? Especially parents are not going to do that. Maybe collectors, that's about it. Which leads me to my next point, where now the only people that are buying these figures are pretty much the conventions, the memorabilia conventions and the autograph signings. So they'll buy them at $2 a figure, and then, you know, you have Bray Wyatt come in for an autograph signing. He signs that figure. Now we're looking at a $200 figure. You know what I mean? So they're making money off of that in that way. But really the main thing that's going to help them out is the Roman Reigns Series 88 figure that's coming out. And that figure has sold so well already that you can't find one at market value. The only way you can find them is maybe for like $40 or $30, but not the $23 that they originally listed at Walmart. So this figure did so well that they're actually re-releasing a whole new batch, and they're projecting this figure to make $18 million. So that's insane. I mean, like, you compare AEW hoping that the CM Punk figure makes $2 million to WWE reproducing a whole new batch of Roman figures that are going to make them $18 million. So, I mean, that right there I think should tell you everything you need to know about what the situation is with AEW and how much they're hemorrhaging money right now. But, you know, it's definitely not as good on the business end as Khan's making it out to seem. And I think that, again, a lot of this is due to what we spoke about already and what Bischoff talked about. You're not growing your audience. You're not making this happen. I'll put it to you like this, Fern. Imagine if WWE decided to make a Jake Paul figure, or if they wanted to make a Bad Bunny figure. How much do you think that would sell? You know what I mean? And
oh, absolutely.
Because of the mainstream involvement. You know what I mean?
Well, again, and the problem is that this is how short-sighted Tony Khan continues to be. And again, listen, I don't have an MBA. I'm not saying I went to business school and I'm going to teach business classes. I'm not saying that, folks. But what I know as a wrestling fan, what I know as someone who does media and presentation and marketing, and I have a pretty good understanding of everything thus far in my lifetime, but it just seems like for a guy who's a millionaire, multimillionaire like Tony Khan, because his father's the billionaire, not him, it just seems like he's squandering not just opportunities with his company, but he's squandering money financially. And, you know, you're looking at doing these venues in small buildings, because, again, that's a niche audience. They're not going to get a stadium. Again, I've talked about this before. You know, his father has an NFL-sized stadium at his disposal. Now, mind you, TIAA Bank Stadium in northern Florida, in Jacksonville, which is a bit of an eyesore when you travel on Route 95, because I've done that. You know, yes, it's a building that – listen, if Vince wanted to do a show tomorrow at the TIAA Bank Stadium, he could do that. He could sell out that ballpark. Khan is not in that position. He's just not. That audience is not sizable enough where he's going to be able to fill up that building. He's not. He'll get people to sell out the United Center. He'll get people to sell out, you know, Arthur Ashe Stadium in Queens later on this fall with 20,000 people plus. You know, he'll get people to go to Las Vegas for Double or Nothing, which is, you know, a little over 20,000 as well. You know, Khan is not putting himself in a good position financially. And as you alluded to, with these collectibles, with this video game. This is something that he needs to make money on, and he needs to make money on this quickly because the gate that he's drawing isn't great. I understand that on Wednesday, Dynamite, I had a buddy of mine that went there, and I believe it was close to a sellout, not a complete sellout, but close to a sellout, and you would think in an area where MJF obviously is going to be that hometown hero. It's New York, even though it's Long Island, it's out there, you know, on Route 495 West, and it's pretty east, excuse me. It's pretty far out there. Yeah, it wasn't selling out. So Khan's in a little bit of trouble. I'm sure that, listen, this isn't money or economic statistics that we're privy to, but it'll be interesting to see in the next few months after Double or Nothing, after Forbidden Door, what the gate will be and what the merch sales will be and what, more importantly, the collectibles revenue will be, because Khan needs to make money. He's been squandering a lot of money. He's been giving out contracts to people. He's been renewing contracts with people. I'm sorry, dude. You know, just like I talk about on my show on Mondays, money doesn't grow on trees, folks. As much as some politicians on one side of the aisle want you to believe, money doesn't grow on trees. Tony Khan's going to find that out, I think, sooner or later, Patrick.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think that, you know, he's a guy, I think, who he loves wrestling. I'm not going to say that he doesn't. He definitely loves it. But you look at his other investments. Let's say Fulham Football Club, for example, right, which Fulham just got promoted to the Premier League again. They were relegated. And even when they were in second division, they were still making $30 million a year for him. $30 million a year. And this guy was barely investing anything into him, maybe $100 million, you know. And that was to cover, like, team costs, everything else. And, I mean, his transfer budget was very minuscule because, you know, it's a second division team. But now that they're going back to the Premier League, I believe they're going to make an additional $10 or $20 million. And that's for the TV rights now, too, which he's going to be a part of. So, I mean, like, you look at Fulham, and Fulham, to me, seems like a better investment than AEW does. Because AEW, he's just losing money nonstop. And I get it's his passion project, but, you know, you have to get to a certain point eventually where you got to look at this and you got to take off the rose-colored glasses and you got to say, okay, what am I doing wrong here? Because now, and this isn't like the beginning of AEW, where AEW had all these, you know, they had a couple of good indie guys, mostly, you know, whatever guys were hot at the moment, some Jay Brones and, you know, maybe a couple ex-WWE guys that were washed up. Like, he has good guys now. He has good workers. There's no reason why the program shouldn't be better. There's no reason why the television program shouldn't be bringing in more people, you know? And I think, again, these are problems that he needs to address, because otherwise – AEW is just going to continue to trend downward, you know, financially. So, you know,
it really is.
We'll see what happens.
It's going to be, I'll tell you, this is something you definitely want to watch out for, because as much as I bitch and moan about WWE and, you know, revenues, record revenues coming in, and the stock's not really reflecting that. I mean, this is something on the other end of 180 where, let me tell you, Tony Khan's not putting himself in a good position. And whether it's not having good wrestling people around him, he clearly doesn't have good money people around him. And I think that's another thing to watch out for also. Pat, this day in wrestling history, I got something in mind. You mind if I go with it?
Of course. I would love to hear this. I have something as well. So let's hit me with yours.
All right. Well, on this day in wrestling history, folks, the WWF at the time presented their first ever In Your House from the Onondaga War Memorial Coliseum in Syracuse, New York. There were about 7,000 people in attendance at the time, with 180,000 buys at home watching on pay-per-view. Apparently, some estimates had it as high as 332 buys. It was interesting because it was really a two-hour, which would later become a three-hour pay-per-view for sort of a lower price compared to, the at the time, the major pay-per-view offerings that Vince McMahon was doing. WrestleMania, King of the Ring, which, by the way, Vince, please bring it back in June. I don't want to see Hell in a Cell in June. I'd like to see King of the Ring again, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, and Royal Rumble, respectively. Interesting card that night in a pre-show free-for-all match. Jean-Pierre Lafitte defeated Bob Holly. Bret Hart defeated Akushi. Razor Ramon defeated Double J Jeff Jarrett and the Roadie in a handicap match. Mabel would defeat Adam Bomb. Later that summer, he would go on to become King Mabel, winning the King of the Ring. Owen Hart and Yokozuna, God rest their souls, defeated the Smoking Guns to retain the WWF World Tag Team titles. Jerry Lawler defeated Bret Hart in an interesting sort of swerve there. Diesel defeated Psycho Sid to retain the WWF Championship. In a post-show dark match, Bam Bam Bigelow defeated Tatanka, as well as The Undertaker defeating Kama. The British Bulldog fought Owen Hart to a 15-minute time limit draw in a King of the Ring qualifying match. Hey, In Your House was one of those pay-per-views from 95 to about almost 97 that was, again, every month, sort of following along with what Bischoff was doing, monthly pay-per-views. Vince McMahon jumped on that bandwagon. In Your House premiered back in 1995, Patrick, on this day in pro wrestling history.
Very nice, very nice. I actually have two, and both of them are relatively short, but they're related. On this day in 1998, ECW presented an event titled It Ain't Seinfeld from the famous Elks Lodge in Queens, New York City, the Madhouse of Extreme. And the event was notable as the night when Taz introduced the world to the FTW Championship, proclaiming himself as the FTW Champion, a belt that is still around and is actually currently being defended and competed for in All Elite Wrestling. Also on this day in 2021, it's a sad note, but ECW mainstay New Jack passed away at the age of 58 due to a heart attack. And New Jack was definitely one of those guys that wasn't a favorite, I would say, of everybody or the wrestling purists. But whenever he came out and you heard Natural Born Killers blaring, you knew shit was about to get crazy. And as somebody who attended the old ECW, as you did, anytime he came out and you heard that song, it was madness. So, yeah, RIP New Jack. You know, some people hated you, but, hey, that's life, right? Some people hate you. Some people love you. I appreciate you, New Jack, and may you rest in peace.
Hey, well said there. And even, folks, for those of you that subscribe to Peacock and look at some of those ECW shows, watch those pay-per-views from 95, 96, 97. I'll tell you, New Jack and Mustafa the Gangster, they were quite a team, to say the least. Now, folks, so our main topic this week here on Working the Marks with Fernando and Patrick. Again, folks, you can always check out archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/Working the Marks.
We have archives now. Holy shit. I can't
believe it.
That's
it. I know. Crazy. Shoot us an email.
Wow.
WorkingTheMarks@gmail.com. Like us on
They're
Facebook.
They're not
going to
email.
Nobody
ever emails us. You know what? If somebody emails us, I'll take you to a Looney Car and I'll buy you a meal. All right?
Uh-oh. Folks, there's a challenge right there.
$4, baby. I'll buy you $4.
That's right. That's right. Or I'll take you to Cortaditos on Union City right there on 45th Street, I think, right there on Park Avenue. Great, great Cuban spot for sure. Also, folks, make sure you follow us on Instagram @working_the_marks and also on Twitter @working_marks. Pat, you know, a lot of people drop this concept in interviews, on social media. We hear Tony Khan literally using this term every single week to promote Dynamite. But let's really talk about dream matches and dream matches that we never got to see. And I'll give you the floor with, let's say, your top two dream matches that we never got to see, in your opinion, and then I'll go with mine.
Okay. All right. I do, in fact, have an honorable mention. I'm going to just sneak that one in. It'll be brief. But my honorable mention is Bryan Danielson against the late, great Owen Hart. I think that's a match that would have been absolutely dynamite. Both of those guys, tremendous character work, great technical ability, great high-flying ability. And I just think it would have been an amazing wrestling match. It would have been really fun, and I think you could have shown it to anybody, and they would have enjoyed. But as far as my actual dream matches go, one of them is The Undertaker, and I'm talking about, like, WrestleMania 25-era Undertaker taking on the Pearl of the Orient, the Great Muta. I feel like that's a matchup that I would have loved to have seen in the peak of their powers. I don't know if they did ever cross paths maybe in the territory days. I don't think so. But to be able to see the dead man take on Muta-san would have been really, really interesting. And I'm talking about like mask era Muta. I think would have been cool because he had that groundwork. And much like Taker, you know, once he realized he couldn't do the stuff that he used to do that he was known for, he ended up changing it and kind of reverting to a mat style and started doing a lot more submission-based stuff, but also incorporating the moonsault when needed and, you know, the handspring back elbow and, you know, that amazing elbow drop that Muta would hit as well. So that's one that I feel would have just been absolutely dynamite to see and would have been just a really cool story. And then for me, my personal, my main event, if you will, of my dream match would be none other than Latino Heat, Eddie Guerrero, taking on the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. I think those two would have delivered an absolute classic. I think they're both very similar in the sense that both guys are the type of guys that can go out into a crowd as a babyface, get a hero's welcome, you know, holding babies, women throwing flowers at them and all this other stuff. And then they would have gotten in the ring, grabbed the microphone, cut a promo, and then 2 minutes later they would have been throwing shit at him and booing him out of the building. Both of those guys had tremendous ability. Both of those guys were incredibly fluid workers, versatile. You could put them in any role on the card. They would make it thrive. They would make what they do important. And to me, both are just amazing in-ring performers. And, you know, it's a real shame that we never got to see it. We did see Ray versus Shawn. And that was a fantastic match. It would have been nice to see it again, but they did do that for the Memorial Edition of SmackDown, or I'm sorry, Raw, with for Eddie Guerrero, for Eddie Guerrero's passing. So, that was definitely one of the highlights of that night. That and hearing Vince say "Viva la Raza," I think was another one that was great. But those are my two. I mean, I know we could go on and on. I mean, shit, we could put together a whole card if we wanted to. But I think those two right there, for me, those three, including the honorable mention, would be something absolutely amazing to see. So, yeah.
Great selections, man. Great selections as always. I'll start with my own honorable mention. I would have really have loved to have seen Rowdy Roddy Piper and CM Punk. I think that, in terms of promos, would have been iconic. I think Piper is a better promo guy than Punk. I just think for what that match could look like, two very different styles to some extent, that's an honorable mention to me. I'm sure that's a match that CM Punk probably wets his bed about, you know, thinking about it late at night, who knows. But that's a dream match, I think, that would have really gotten some attention and would have really, I think, entertained people, to say the least. As far as my two, I'm going to go a different route here. I'm going to pick a tag match that people will maybe stop and think after this. I'll tell you, in their heyday, if we were, you know, listen, if we got the Usos and the Steiner brothers, I think that would have blown the roof out of any building in this country.
Nice.
I think this is a tag match that would have entertained four very solid workers. Now, again, at the time, you know, the Steiner brothers as a tag team collectively were not the best promo guys per se. We know what Scott Steiner became later on in his singles career. But at the time, during their babyface run, I would argue the Steiner brothers were very effective. Let's be honest, they were the only team to ever get a TV win against the Road Warriors. I mean, nobody else can really say that in the way of booking. I mean, the way the Road Warriors were booked throughout the late 80s, early 90s, nobody ever got over on them, except the Midnight Express on a non-televised house show, I think somewhere in Tennessee. But on television, when you saw the Steiner Brothers go over on the Road Warriors, that was a big thing. So I would argue that that was something that, you know, got a lot of attention. I think that, you know, two amateur wrestlers like Scott and Rick Steiner and the incredible workers are the Usos. I think that match would have been so entertaining. In my opinion, if I was booking that match, Patrick, I'd like, you know, I would have had the Steiner brothers go over on them. But I think that match, no matter who would have won, I think fans would have been thoroughly satisfied with that match. And in my other match, I'll tell you, this is one where you're probably going to be like, oh, there goes Fernando. There's his Markism, you know, shining through. I got to say, you know, if we were able to have seen Bret Hart and Kurt Angle, I think that would have been as solid a wrestling match as we ever could have experienced. And for a guy who is, let's be honest, you know, Kurt was the better worker, he was better on the microphone than Bret, and it pains me to say that because, you know, how much of a Bret Hart fan I am, I think that would have been exceptional storytelling between Bret Hart and Kurt Angle. Yeah, we can reenact that on 2K, you know, on our PlayStations or our Xboxes, respectively. But I think that match in itself, you know, probably would not have been as good as Shawn and Kurt Angle at WrestleMania 21 in Los Angeles in 2005. But I think that match ideally would have been just a tier below, Patrick.
Yeah, no, I think it would have been great. And to your point, yeah, Kurt was definitely a better promo guy. Bret was a rotten promo guy, in my opinion. Very boring. Very just, I don't know, not interesting at all. I think one of the things that his brother was definitely better than him at was cutting a promo, I mean, aside from wrestling. But, yeah,
well, remember,
I mean, and again,
well,
if anybody feels
better,
differently, you are welcome to email the show and talk about this, by the way.
That's right, workingthemarks@gmail.com. But, Pat, again, Owen was a better heel, and Owen cut better promos as a heel. As a face, there weren't anything to write home about. Bret at least cut better promos as a heel, certainly in that anti-USA angle, but he was a good babyface promo too. I think Bret gets defecated a little bit too much when it comes to his babyface run, I would argue.
I strongly disagree. I think Bret's promo work was just still very flat. I mean, it was passable. It did the job. It told the story, but he wasn't a compelling guy that I was going to pay to see speak. You know what I mean? You know, his wrestling ability was great, but I would still say Owen overall was a much better wrestler and just a much better worker than Bret. Owen, unfortunately, just never really got that shine. Owen as a face, I think, kind of had his moments. But again, like, I don't think we ever really got to see Owen go into that next phase of his career. I think had he survived, I really honestly feel like it would have only been a matter of time before he dropped the Blue Blazer shtick and he would have gone and, you know, seriously been pursuing the world championship, especially with the arrival of guys like Benoit, Jericho, Guerrero, you know, Perry Saturn, those guys. I mean, you know, Malenko. I mean, he would have mixed it up with those guys for sure. But, yeah, I mean, you know, that, all fantastic dream matches. I think the Steiners and the Usos would have been great too. The Usos, to me, are an all-time tag team. I know that they don't really get the shine maybe as much that they should with the Marks, maybe because they don't do flips and they don't have a move named after some Mark journalist. But to me, you know, they're fantastic. They're believable. I mean, if the Usos walked out, I'll put it to you like this, but if you saw the Usos walking down the block or the Young Bucks walking down the block, which way are you going to go?
Oh, I mean, that goes without saying. The Usos are a much more intimidating,
you're
going to
feel intimidated by the Usos' presence, and not because of their skin color either. You're going to be feeling intimidated by their presence because of the way that they look. They're imposing men. They're big, imposing men. They're not these little, you know, fucking hippie-looking guys from Cucamonga, Rancho Cucamonga, California. You know what I mean? They look imposing. They look believable. The Steiner brothers, they looked believable too. So, yeah, I think it would have been a fantastic match. And your honorable mention match, I think, would be great too, maybe because of the promo work. I don't know if the work would have been so good, but I think it would have been a great promo exhibition between, you know, two of the best talkers in the business, in the history of the business. And to me, Roddy Piper, the greatest talker in the history of the business.
No question. And I think those are dream matches. And listen, we can try to reenact them on wrestling video games. And certainly that's the way we can sort of relive nostalgia like we do as wrestling fans. Because, again, part of being a wrestling fan is enjoying nostalgia, whether it's subscribing to Peacock, whether it's buying video games, going to, hey, listen, even today at the American Dream Mall in East Rutherford, New Jersey, across the way from that god-awful-looking building over there in Route 120, MetLife,
you mean,
whatever.
Where the
park,
Jets play?
JetLife. Correct, JetLife Stadium. You know, I had the privilege of meeting Ric Flair again today, courtesy of Fighterman Sports, a promotional sports company. Obviously, if you follow them on Instagram, and they got shows coming up next weekend in Orlando with people like The Undertaker and other luminaries as well. So it was nice to meet Ric Flair again today. You know, irrespective of what we've learned about Ric Flair, because of Dark Side of the Ring and other things, I remain a Bret.
He didn't show up in a helicopter, did he?
No, he did not, no. I remain a Ric Flair fan.
He didn't show up in a helicopter?
No, he did not know. And I might get some heat by changing my profile picture on Facebook to him later on today. I don't care. I love Ric Flair. But,
but you're no stranger to that. You're no stranger to heat. You're good.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. But, folks, you know, this is what we live on, nostalgia. And it's part of our childhood. It's part of our adulthood. It's why we remain dedicated pro wrestling fans. Pat, we'll close out the show in a minute, but what should we look out for coming up?
Well, I mean, Double or Nothing would definitely be cool. Let's see how that goes. But as far as tonight goes, May 14th, 2022, if you're not doing anything, if you're just sitting at home, twiddling your ball bag, flicking the bean, whatever it is you choose to do, smoking a bit of ganja, having a beer, unwinding, maybe watching some garbage wrestling, don't do that. Make your way on over to Cray 43 at 120 43rd Street tonight to see the child actors in their sensational return performance, the first performance for us in 2022. I might even get canceled tonight. I don't know. I'm thinking about it. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm like a freaking loose cannon tonight. So you might want to come on down and check that out. Not only that, we're also going to have performances from Pellagra, Suelo Loco, and Claude Davis. So you don't want to miss this one, folks. I know the professor will be there. And if anybody's got anything to say to us about any of our comments, whether it be on that other little rinky-dink podcast you do or this hugely successful, I mean, people-drawing podcast that we're doing here, Working the Marks, then you could step to us and we'll take you down tag team style. And not that other way that you're thinking that's disgusting, but you know what I mean.
That's right. That's right. Folks, come up to us again and say hi when you see us there later tonight at Cray 43. Folks, always remember you can check out not just today's episode, but all of our episodes at www.blogtalkradio.com/workingthemarks. You can download the episodes and listen to them anywhere, anytime from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. And, of course, you know, one of the things we really, really enjoy is the feedback. Write to us, folks, workingthemarks@gmail.com. Certainly make sure you like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram @working_the_marks. Also check us out on Twitter @working_marks. You can also check us out on our own Instagram @PattyRican. That's PaddyRican for Patrick Vincent Rivera. You can check out my own Instagram @TheAmazingProfessor. You know, and that's right about that. And of course, you know, folks, check us out. Tell people everyone you know who are wrestling fans, or maybe not, maybe you can make them wrestling fans, about the best pro wrestling podcast that there is right now out there every single week on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, blogtalkradio.com/workingthemarks. Share it. Remember, sharing is caring in this social media age. So we appreciate you tuning in, folks. He is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, and I would argue premier musician, Patrick Rivera. I am New Jersey's premier journalist, Fernando Uribe, folks, saying so long. Enjoy the weekend again, and thank you for tuning in to the latest edition of Working the Marks on Blog Talk Radio. Chico.